Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta to Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta to Yankee, Delta to Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
I'm Sam Sebrin, and for this special edition called Everything is Eel, environmental educator Liz Lo-Judas and myself co-produced a program about Anguilla rostrata, or the American eel. You will hear the voices of Chris Bowser, John Lipscomb, Ken Sukata, Barbara Heinzman, Dee Stranitza, Mark Grennan, John Cannon, Alta Turner, Ron Locke, Zareda Maloney, myself, Liz, and kids from Jeannie Cardinet's second grade class at the Coxsackie Elementary School. Also, music was specially created for this broadcast by the Eel People. Let's listen.
Hi, Sam. This is Liz Lo-Judas. I'm calling to thank you for your interest in becoming a volunteer for the American Eel Project. And we're really pleased that you're interested in helping us check the net for glass eels, the baby American eels that come up into the Hanakoi Creek. So give me a call so we can start getting you into our schedule. My number is 518-622.
The first time Liz told me about the Eel Project, I was completely fascinated, and I knew I wanted to be a part of it and learn more.
The Eel Project is a study of the migration of the American eel into the Hudson River and some of the tributary streams that run into the river. This project is headed up by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's Hudson River Estuary Program, and it involves groups of volunteers working together to set nets in tributary streams and check those nets every day for young eels that are moving into the tributaries from the river. And this project takes place for around 6 weeks each spring.
Yeah, eels have been around for a long time since dinosaurs.
The dorsal fin, you can tell that it's an eel.
Which means it's a fish, right?
Yeah, it's a fish.
A fish, how do you know it's a fish?
Yeah, he's got fins, and he's also got gills. So this is a fish, it's not a snake, it's not a reptile, it's actually a fish.
They are both saltwater and freshwater.
There's a lot of unknowns about eels, which make them probably one of the most fascinating creatures in the ocean.
The whole story is just amazing when I tell people.
You mean about eels?
Yeah, of coming from the Sargasso Sea and all the way up here. People have no idea.
Do you guys remember where eels are born?
Just say it.
Sargasso Sea.
Yes, exactly. They're born in Sargasso Sea, which is in between Bermuda and Puerto Rico. So, does anybody know roughly how many miles they swim to get to the Hudson River? Yes.
1,000?
Yes, a little over 1,000 miles.
So, glass eels are the very young, probably about a year old eels, and they're completely transparent, which is why they're called glass eels, right?
Correct. They are come directly from the ocean. And basically, when they're still in salt water, all you can really see is two little black eyes and a little bit of their vertebrae. But basically, they're almost totally transparent. You can see their heart, lungs. And usually, the eels are trying to go upstream with the least amount of resistance. So the way they do that is to avoid the current coming down on a good-sized stream. And they use the incoming tide to push them up. So those are the ways that basically you'll an eel can preserve its energy for climb up.
One of the theories is that during new and full moons, when the high tides are highest, that's when eels use that high tide to help them ride into these tributaries.
So they travel 1,000 miles to get up here to the Hudson, and then they'll stay here. The males will stay for, 7-10 years, the females a little bit longer, up to 30 years max. And then where do they go? Yes.
Back to the Sargasso Sea.
Exactly. And then they'll spawn once, and then they'll die. So that's their life cycle.
Because they can't breed them in captivity.
No.
They're not even quite sure how they breed
They don't know anything about them. The youngest one they've ever found was in the Sargasso Sea, and they found a with Alvin that's submersible. But they still don't know if that's really where they go.
Oh, that's true. So you mean it's not really proven that that's where they mate?
Huh. But they never find any adults. They never...
Isn't that... What, they just find the glass eels in the Sargasso Sea?
That's the smallest one they found there.
That's interesting. So they don't find the adults?
No, they've never found an adult.
Basically, an eel was born to be eaten by something. So when they're babies, little fish eat them. When they're grown up, striped bass eat them. I've seen heron eating a 3-foot eel, just swallowing it down their throat. So their whole life is to avoid being prey. And so at nighttime, they hide in the mud and in the grass and everything else. And as the tides come on in, they come into the tide and they try to go up the little streams to live to their adult life, and usually lakes. And when they're ready to come back, they go back to spawn. So every eel you see in New York State has come from the ocean. As I said, eels are incredible little creatures. And what they do is they'll actually have this need to just keep on going upstream, hopefully to find a nice lake to live in for 10, 20 years before they come back down. And they end up going against dams, rock formations, rapids. And anytime there is a situation where they just can't swim, they literally find a grassy area on a slimy rock, and their bodies start roping literally over each other's bodies. So if you go at night, you can see them actually climbing up in these little strands up and over barriers to higher water. It's an incredible sight. I've only seen it twice in my life. And the water has to get warm enough, and then once the water is warm enough, they group up below the barrier and they start climbing up and over. And actually, your NCON people now use that technique to help them up and over dams and other barriers by creating artificial ladders, basically. And these eels use them to go upstream.
Eels can stay out of water for 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, it's two.
And then are they walking across land?
They stay close to water.
They can come out of the water.
They come out of the water, and like on a rainy night, they'll go through the grass.
Yeah.
They can go around the dams and everything.
John, they're going to take over the world. You know? Can swim in the water, can walk on land. You know?
As eels migrate, they're growing to adulthood. They transform from glass eels to elvers and then into yellow eels. Yellow eels are adults, and they're usually over 1 foot in length, and they have olive green backs and yellow bellies. And all this time that eels are migrating upstream, they're heading up in elevation as well into the mountains. I've seen female eels in Lake Myosotis in Rensselaerville, which is at an elevation of about 2,000 feet. So they've traveled a long way from sea level to the mountains.
The story of the female eel is frankly more compelling than the male eel. So the female eels will live much longer. They'll live 10, 20, 30 years. And they'll get much bigger. If you have an eel that's over 2 feet, there's very good chances that it's a female eel. Male eels, they tend not to ascend so far into freshwater. They tend to live less, 5 to 10 years. They tend to be smaller, 2 feet long. It's the females that live a long time that get really big, because a big female might have up to 20 million eggs in her when she goes back down to the Sargasso. So, you know, she's the reason that she's up here in this freshwater is that it's a place to eat, to build body fat. When that body fat gets to a certain, you know, when her health gets to a certain size, that digestive tract withers away. She's done eating. She just becomes a one-way missile of reproduction back down to Sargasso.
The female is bigger than the male, so don't think that the male is a kid. The female is very big.
I think the girls enjoy that the female is the biggest.
It's finally a chance to be bigger than the boys.
So that's a different species. Very closely related. Same genus, but a slightly different species. They take a lot longer. It takes them basically an extra year to get there. But they're also, they have a similar lifestyle. They're born basically in the same place, the Sargasso Sea. It just takes them longer to get there. One of the big questions, so both the European and the American eels will live up in the watersheds for 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 years, and then they'll migrate back. The big question is, when those eels, let's take New York, here's New York, here's the Hudson River right here, okay, we're right about at the T. When those eels leave, the question is, do they cross the Gulf Stream to head to the Sargasso Sea, or do they ride that current all the way around, past Europe, past Africa, and come into the Sargasso Sea from this direction?
Wow, so they're both originating at the same place,
yeah,
the bank.
But then they're out in the sea, someone's taking a left and someone's taking a right, heading to Europe. Pretty interesting.
People eat the eels.
Yeah, they eat eels.
Different cultures use eels differently. The Spaniard has a garlic and olive oil, of course, dish with glass eels. And literally, it's like a bowl of spaghetti, an expensive bowl of spaghetti, but it just comes in the plate, and it's just the raw eel, like a ceviche or something, they just a little olive oil and garlic, and they eat them that way.
Wow.
And the Dutch smoke them, and they eat them like hot dogs. You have little sabot-type stands along the street, with smoked eels hanging down, they wrap it up with a piece of wax paper and off you go. There is a tradition that you should eat a live eel with sake or liquor for nighttime virility. And so what you do is you get these eels, and I think the drinks were like $100 a pop or something like that. And you put the eel in your drink, and then you just swallow it down with your liquor. And rumor has it that was supposed to increase your evening enjoyment.
In the U.S., it used to be commonplace for people to catch and eat eels.
They used to catch them out of Catskill Creek all the time. And what they would do, they'd get a piece of nylon hose and put either meat in it or a bunch of worms in it. And you just tie it off and you put it on a rope and you just put it in the creek, and when you feel someone tugging, you just bring it up slowly, put it in, because eels have no real teeth, and their teeth would get stuck on the nylon, so you could actually just put a boatload of eels without a hook. They would just get their teeth caught on the nylon, and you just kind of raise them up, drop them in the boat, they would let go, and just do it again. It's called bobbing, eel bobbing.
Eels as a source of sustenance have fallen out of favor in much of the Northeast. In the Hudson River, eels are exposed to PCBs and other contaminants, so the New York State Department of Health advises against eating the fish. And, you know, since eels have no value as a food fish or as a sports fish, they are misunderstood and disrespected by many anglers. Although people in our region may not be happy when they catch an eel, they actually are in demand in many other parts of the world. Eels can't be bred in captivity, so people actually catch glass eels and then grow them in fisheries for use as food.
The only reason you catch eels is you can't grow them in captivity, so you have to catch the baby eels out of the ocean And the only way to do that is to go out at night and pick them up and shoot them up to the airport, put them in bags of oxygen, and off they go and pray that they stay alive through the trip. Catching them, shipping them to Asia, putting them in fish farms, both in Japan and in China. One of the years we were working, the headlines in the news were people abandoning their slot machines to go fishing because there was more money to be made catching eels than gambling. The only state you're allowed to catch eels in America now is in Maine. They still have significant runs. And generally speaking, you know, they export over 1,000 to 2,000 kilos every season, and that's in a month. So if you, you know, multiply that times 2,000, that's quite a few eels that are pulling out of the ocean, and they've been doing that for at least 30 years. So given that, you kind of have to question whether or not the fishery itself is what has made the population crash.
Maybe my favorite part of the eel counting experience is wading upstream with a bucket of counted eels and setting them free on their merry way to head upstream where they won't be recaptured by our net. We'll be right back after this song by the Eel People called Eel People.
It was an effect. film. It wasn't real eels. Oh, somebody pulls a horse's head out of the bay in Gdansk, and it's just it's oozing with eels, and it's just such a revolting sight. It's a really vivid image. And in fact, I don't remember anything else about that film, but I remember the horse's head and all these eels coming out of the nostrils and the eye sockets and the ears and the mouth. It was just incredibly revolting.
Hi, Sam. It's Lislo Judas. I'm calling because you are signed up for checking the eel net today, and Sarah Mount, the person from DEC who directs the program, just called me and said there's supposed to be a whole ton of rain in the forecast, and they want to pull the net and end the season.
What we want to do is take like that end and bring it up there, and the rest of it has to, without ripping it to shreds or doing any damaging the net, just pull it up. But I can get that. You know, this would make a great permanent marker, like a gauge.
But is the net off it?
Yeah. Oh, well, not yet.
I don't think, actually, I'm not even sure it has a loop at the bottom here.
Good work.
Kind of real muddy for nothing.
Well, I've got this.
As much of me as I can, then I'll come back down.
We've got NASA, Houston, Atlantis, anybody. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm part of it.
Takes on a bit of an odor, doesn't it?
Grab it from underneath, yeah.
Oh! All right. Look. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm really enjoying being a citizen scientist in this eel project, and I feel like I've learned so much in the last year. Thanks, Liz. This was really fun.
Happy eeling, Sam.
Hi!
Hi!
We're on TV!
Wait, are you?
But they're pretty rugged. I think a big 3-foot eel going over dam is like, whatever, roll, and keep going. Just my guess.
I don't know that they sound like that.
I hope we catch 1,000 eels.
We tried this time.
We're looking for eels. We're looking for eels.
So you had your own eel liberation movement. What's that business about stomachs being dissolved? I didn't quite get that. The equivalent of the ocean going crow.
Yeah, and then she told me about this eel project, and I said, oh, I would love to do that. And then I got out here, and then we were talking, and we were like, this is a great story for the radio.
With the recorder or whatever.
They can come out of the water.
But they come out of
the
water.
Oh, yeah. They can actually breathe through their skin. I just think eels are fun.
This program was co-produced by myself, Sam Sebrin, with environmental educator Liz Lo-Judas for Free 103.9's Transmission Arts program.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.